This is The Financial Coconut, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. And I'm Timothy Mazier, editor-in-chief of Blockhead. Join me and the crew on our weekly Friday segment as we filter out the noise in the crypto space and keep you updated on the ideas that actually matter. This is Blockcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of Blockcast. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut.
Hello, hello. And I am Mark, and I am the founder and CEO of Blockhead.
And this is Tim, managing editor at Blockhead.
Yeah, which has a new haircut and freshly shaved.
let's see how long this lasts.
Yeah. I had a part-time cleaner. She came on Monday, so I took the chance to shave before that.
Wait, she helped you shave?
No lah, the hair goes everywhere.
I was like, wow, usually, part-time cleaner all inclusive these days, huh? Everything must pauka liao, huh?
She comes once a week, so I can only shave once a week. And last week was Chinese New Year, so you know, that's why my facial hair went out of control for a while.
Okay. So the idea here is because she comes, that's why you shave, and then she will clean up the hair in that sense. Is that the idea?
Yeah. The hair goes everywhere, okay? It's so hard to get off the sink and mirror. Okay, never mind.
Oh my goodness. But yeah, we will do this in person soon. One day we'll do live, and then you can actually see like the face, and you will know what we are saying. Nice. And yeah, I think the week has been quite an interesting one. There's some new developments here and there. And we continue to see numbers pretty strong. Has your faith been restored in the space?
Actually, we've been receiving pretty good traction on the website and readership numbers have been growing. So I guess that's a good sign. People are also looking up and wondering what to do.
Well, as of last month, put it this way, we reach about 500,000 page views. It's pretty good.
Nice. Is that like a random flex?
Yes, it is. No, it's not random. It's intentional.
It's intentional flex.
No, yeah, it's a milestone. It's a milestone.
It's a milestone. Yeah. Wow, so PG. So PG, yeah. But yes, I think sponsors, you must look out for this, okay? So yeah, we have, once again, three interesting stories for all of you. And I'm going to roll with the first story, right? Very important story. This one, to me, I was like, wow, so fun. This thing's so cute. Right, and the first story goes, right? Newest Web3 social media, Bondi. It's actually an NFT back. So the NFT move has backfired, right? And prompting removal from privacy policy. For all of you that didn't know, Bondi is a Singapore-based latest social media kind of craze, right? Which actually even I downloaded it. But what happened is it was actually accused of a credit card fraud and so far being slandered for some undercover NFT project. And Bondi has taken a hit from its user base. But actually from a user, when I downloaded it, I just thought it was damn cute. Right? So the UI was amazing. It was very interesting. Like the user interface and the interaction was quite smooth. Right? So I was actually very shocked when I saw all this coverage that, oh, actually there's some privacy thing at the back. It got NFT, got credit card leak. It's like, what the hell is going on? I never even input my credit card.
I mean, they had to update their privacy policy to remove the mention of NFTs. It wasn't clear what that integration was, but some eagle-eyed users found these mentions, in the documentation.
Okay, I think before we get to that point, right, like, have you guys spent any time on Bondi?
I have.
Not me, yeah.
Okay, I find it, I mean, just for the benefit of the people who are listening who have not downloaded the app, right, it's actually pretty fun.
It is. I can hammer your face.
Yeah, so like, you know, it's like, it brings me back to the days of like The Sims, if you guys played that, right?
Yes, I did.
And now you have it in your app, right? Like, you know, where you essentially have like, you can, you know, recreate your own space, your own room, and then your avatar, and then you can do like weird shit with it. With your friends.
we can sit on a swing together, guys. Yeah.
What is it like compared to metaverse platforms like Decentraland or Sandbox?
I think... The thing that really came to my mind here, right, was that Electronic Arts, right, they had all that great IP with The Sims, right? I have no idea why they didn't kind of like capitalize on this metaverse thing, because I felt that that particular game or that particular IP would have been perfect for it, given the fact that, you know, you've got millions of like legacy kind of like Wii players already, you know? So this just kind of like, I mean, Bondi just essentially reminded me of what I used to do with Sims, right? But now it's an app version. With regards to Tim's, I guess, question on how does this compare to the other, like, you know, like metaverse platforms, I think that, you know, first of all, there's the social element in Bondi, it's there, like, you know, like you see people interacting on it, right? And on top of that, like, it's getting a lot of traction. So like every other person of a certain age group, I mean, I would say like under 30 that I meet, like, you know, they've heard of Bondi or they've downloaded it at least over the past couple of weeks.
Hey, you're not under 30.
No, and oh, well, yeah. It's okay. We borderline. We squeeze ourselves in, okay? But the idea here, yeah, is you can chat with your friends. You know, you can share your pictures. You know, it's like WhatsApp meets Instagram, you know, kind of situation. But the whole thing is a lot smoother rather than going into a separate tab, you know, like a DM kind of thing. Like it's just like we are chatting and then...
So it's a 3D version of WhatsApp.
Correct. So I think that like it has a Web3 metaverse vibe, right? Where like, you know, they've kind of created a virtual world for you to kind of, you know, interact with your friends in. But I'm not sure which part of it is actually Web3. You know, I mean, this is a great... social media app to me, at least what has unfolded so far, right? I mean, I think that it's fun, it's seamless, and at the same time also, you know, I mean, I guess the graphics and then like, you know, like the things that you can do with your avatar and how you can kind of create it, right? Like there's a lot of like, it's lo-fi enough that it can attract like, you know, like a mass audience, but at the same time it takes social media to a space that, you know, it feels a bit uncharted. Yeah,
that's why.
So the app's publisher, MetaDream, basically they set the groundwork for future Web3 implementation. I mean, it looks like that's the direction, but then it had to make a U-turn. I mean, Web2 users are just not ready to engage with Web3 tech. Even though they like all these elements, you know, that I mean, shown by its popularity.
Wait, I really don't know if that is a fair statement, in a sense that when I used it, right, I had no thought process around like, oh, this is a Web3 thing. Like what Mark said, right, it's just a more ingenious social media kind of interaction where you put together all the most interesting elements out there and then you can have your own room, you can, you know, dress up your avatar and all that. Like, which is why when I saw the news coverage, I was like, why is there like a Web3 element, like where is the Web3 element coming from?
Or maybe not yet, but they have the provisions in its, you know, privacy statements and all that kind of stuff for such future integration.
Yeah, I guess the reason why, like, you know, this has become news also, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, it is a new social media app that people are using, is, you know, they faced a lot of backlash when the fans or their users found out that, you know, they were planning to launch an NFT, right? Or there was supposed to be some sort of NFT element to the product. And what was really interesting, I guess the interesting point to me here, right, was that if we backpedal like say a year ago, any brand out there, if let's say you had a Web3 or like a metaverse element, or like if you launch an NFT, right, it was great marketing. Like that would immediately make your brand like cool, and like it would immediately kind of like, you know, like give it that PR value that was really trending at that point in time. And then, you know, fast forward a year later, and here we are now. You mentioned that there's an NFT element to your brand, and then you get backlash, you know. So I think that, like, I mean, obviously this is a huge, it's quite a generalization, but I think that we are in a space where like there is some negative connotations to the Web3 aspect, you know, of the branding, especially if let's say the community that is currently using your product, it doesn't come from that community, it doesn't come from the Web3 world.
Yeah, I mean, like the gaming community has had these issues for a while.
Yeah, gaming community has had this issue for a while, exactly. You know, so as much a culture thing, you know, as it is like, you know, a result of what happened with like, you know, the crypto crash and FTX and all the scams, right? I just think that the Web3 world hasn't really integrated itself very well. So like, you know, there's still a lot of unfamiliarity and like, you know, like I would say people don't trust it.
I mean, it doesn't help that a lot of Web3 projects are essentially just Web2, but with a new way to fleece their user base.
So I guess, you know, like we can start from the question here, right? Like, why does Bondi need to be a Web3 product? You know,
it comes down to the question of can I push a little bit further on like what is the difference between Web2 and Web3 to begin with in that sense?
Okay, I was going to get to that. Yeah,
go for it.
So, you know, at the core of it, right, a Web3, I would say a project, right, it's about owning your IP, owning your identity, online, so that there is that element of ownership and privacy in this situation, right? When translated to an app like Bondi, like what that could essentially play out to be is that, like, look, if I buy an NFT or my avatar is essentially an NFT, right? I own the rights, the copyright, the intellectual property rights to my avatar on that platform. Okay, and then by extension, if Bondi decides to monetize or they commercialize a certain way by getting ad revenue, one potential outcome here is that I could potentially earn revenue, from my IP that I own through my NFT, right? So this is one aspect of it, right? And then I ask myself the question, right? Do people really want to kind of own the IPs to their avatars? I don't think they do, you know. I don't think they care. Right, if I download a social media app and then be it Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter or whatever, right? I'm completely fine with the idea that I'm given the license to use my account and create an account, but I don't own that account completely. I don't own it outright. And that's just the way the culture has been for social media, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. This is my take on it, lah. Yeah. And given the fact that this company, it doesn't feel like it makes sense for them to decentralize completely and then cede power completely to the users, in my opinion. So that comes back to the question of does an app like this actually need to have a Web3 or NFT element? I'm not sure. In my opinion, I can't see the value for the audience aside from the fact that, it allows the business to raise money quickly.
Fair. Interesting. But I do understand what you're saying, that some apps are just great at what it is, but does it really need this whole Web3 NFT kind of fundraiser strategy? That one, I'm not too sure. But hey,
By the way, the answer is not no, there could be some value here. I think depending on how they want to they plan to roll this out. If the intention is really to kind of launch an NFT project, right? We'll need to see the details, on the surface of it, I'm not sure what the use case is going to be like, right? If you think about certain live streaming apps that have kind of done things that are similar, right? So previously, when Bigo Live was a thing, and then you could buy virtual gifts, for your friends, or for some girl that you like or some live streamer that you like, you could tip them, etc. All this can be done in Web2. What? The result is the same, right? You buy a digital flower or present, and then you send it to somebody, and then you pay using a credit card, and then the service provider gets a cut. It's a working business model, so I'm not sure why that needs to be decentralized.
Fair, I agree. But I just want to caution our audience: please don't buy digital flower for your partner this Valentine's. You might need to download another app to start finding a new partner. Okay, but yeah, all that being said, I think Bondi is great. As a user, I was it is quite fun. It's not that I go in a lot.
It is fun.
I don't go in a lot because not everyone is there yet. Most of people are still on IG, on WhatsApp and all that, right? But hey, if check it out. I think there's some ideas that you can pick out from this new app, Bondi. Nice. Cool. So this brings us to the next story.
Okay, next story coming up. I'm sure that there are some Dungeons & Dragons fans in the audience here.
Especially
like the not you?
Not me, I'm not. But yes, please go for it.
So Dungeons & Dragons, right, as we all know, has been, it's a legacy role-playing game with years and years and years and years of history, right? So they reversed a 23-year-old license that allowed creators to use D&D content for their own content, such as books, graphics, and novels and podcasts, without paying royalties, right? So, for example, if I was if I hosted a D&D podcast, I could have a D&D themed podcast, right, without paying royalties back to Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast are the publishers of D&D, right? And they're a subsidiary of Hasbro. So they've essentially reversed this license, and they've also at one point reiterated that NFT related creations, right, would not be permitted. So then a week later, they said that they came out to say that 23-year-old, gaming license that allowed people to create content from D&D IP without paying royalties would remain untouched, right? That means they kind of backtracked on their original decision to kind of reverse that ruling, right? Mm-hmm. However, they said that for people looking to kind of launch NFT projects using D&D licenses, this would not be permitted, or rather, I think that they would need to kind of be paying a royalty.
No.
No?
No. That's why it's not. So we gotta restart.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Basically, like a week ago, you know, they said that they're going to update its license structure and now they will require royalties, including for the use of NFTs. A week later, they said they will just stick to their old one. So NFTs are not touched.
Okay.
So that's why it's a win for NFTs, because NFT community is dependent on, you know, the user base for content. But, you know, NFTs is just a minor issue in this story. I mean, it's not the main form of content creation in the D&D world. But, you know, Wizards' revised rules were still a blow for the Web3 community. So its U-turn is quite a significant decision.
Mm. Not as significant as if we U-turn GST increase lah. But anyway, that's a different story. But I think the idea here is that if you think about it, for Dungeons & Dragons or for Wizards of the Coast, right? Which is a subsidiary of Hasbro. So maybe it's a Hasbro thing, not the Wizards of the Coast thing. For them to even think about this, right? To entertain this idea that, okay, let us roll back this open gaming license, right? Let's take this back. Is very suggestive of like the value of the IP and also very suggestive of how big capital then look at some of these like very established IP, like what Mark said in the opening, right? Like Sims, you know, or some of this other IPs, because of how crypto has developed and how Web3 has developed, then it becomes like, it's no longer just a very simple licensing model anymore, right? There are many other things that we can play around with such that it becomes a viable thing to like, hey, let's take it back lah, from the community. You know, it's no longer open.
It also, I think that like, I mean, just building from that, right? If you think about Dungeons and Dragons as a, you know, as a piece of IP property and how like it has achieve that type of longevity that few other games have had, right? Is that if you think about how people, you know, essentially interact or play D&D, you know, these game masters have, what is required here is that like good, you know, dungeon masters or game masters. I think that's the correct term, right?
Yeah. Although I know it goes to, it lets the imagination run very well, dungeon masters, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. So they essentially have to create their own worlds, right? Using like, you know, the D&D tool set and set of rules, right? I mean, depending on which edition is being used for the game. And I mean, there's certain parameters here, right? So there's certain, you know, like regions or worlds in the game that like, you know, like you can use as a template. But once that is in place, everything else is really just up to the community to interpret, right? So the essence of this game requires the community to take ownership of their own IP to begin with. Mm. So I think if we think about it from that point of view, right, this decision to actually now allow, or rather like, you know, like to reverse the ban on like NFTs based off D&D content, right? It makes a lot of sense.
I mean, the only reason why this game has enjoyed such longevity is down to its user base and community and its growth in recent years due to like, you know, the
Netflix,
rise in D&D
Stranger
related
things.
Podcasts, YouTube campaigns. Sorry?
Like, you know, the first time I know about D&D was because of Stranger Things. That's it.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, that kind of sparked the revival for sure. But it's down to the community. And if the community is not behind or the publisher's moves, they will just leave en masse, which looked to be, you know, where it was going when it released the plans to abandon the open game license. But this U-turn is definitely a win for the community of D&D players, but also for NFTs in general. It's a reinforcement of their wider structure and for NFT D&D creators as well.
Yeah, a very good analogy for this is that I think this is, you know, one of the first shining examples of like, you know, like how user generated content can work, right?
Yeah.
And so if you imagine like a social media platform, or even a forum, right? Like say like Hardware Zone, where like, you know, like content is just user generated, right? And then Hardware Zone comes up to say, okay, look, we're going to require licenses for like content creation now. Mm. You know, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I would actually use an analogy like this, where like if you have like a platform or like a community where everything is just literally user generated, right? And then you want to add like, you know, more friction on top of that with either like a royalty payment or some sort of license, right? I mean, it just completely screws the whole thing. Yeah.
No, but that is a very Web3 thing, right? Like everybody owns something. You set up a structure, you know, and there are a lot of independent owners in this space, you know, but then the structure owner tries to scalp something at the top, right? Whether it is some sort of fees, gas fees or whatever, right? And then, and I think that's the interesting part of this, right? How something that is like really, really old, you know, it has already established some sort of an offline structure that's similar to what a lot of Web3 guys want to do, you know, and then now, how is this thing going to integrate back into to the new world, into the NFT space, into the crypto space? I think that's like, oh, it's quite an interesting idea, you know, especially for newer creators or even very established brands as more and more brands, I'm quite sure, will try to monetize in a different way, similar to how some of these other guys are doing.
I mean, I don't know enough of like, to be very honest, I don't know enough of like Hasbro's business model or like with Wizards of the Coast, right?
Hasbro's
I
mean, I know that biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest game.
Wizards of the Coast with regards to kind of like D&D specifically, like, you know, I mean, obviously when they issue their own IP and then, you know, like that's the most direct way where they kind of like, you know, like make money from it. But in my opinion, everything else that comes on top of it, like it's probably just marketing for the ecosystem.
Yeah, fair. Which is very Web3, which is very NFT.
Charging, yeah, if you're not even charging royalties, right, for like writing, for producing novels and books using like, you know, like D&D IP, then where else is the money coming from?
Yeah. but I don't know. Maybe it's also because they wanted 20 to 25%. That's also, I mean, it's quite a chunk.
That's pretty unreasonable. That's pretty unreasonable.
That's quite a chunk. Yeah, they never study public policy. Must slowly increase one. Cannot come in so quick. So you will lose a population. But yeah, I think these are very interesting ideas that we will continue to see play out in community-led projects and, you know, some of these big brands as they try to enter into the crypto and NFT space. Yeah, that's it for D&D. You know, shout out to all you that play D&D. I don't, right? Like I said, it's only a Stranger Things to me. Huh? So yeah, let's go to the last story. Tim, bring us through.
So this is a kind of a continuation from our discussion last week. You know, we talked about DAOs, right? The future of DAOs, you know, the state of that, where is it going? There hasn't been much talk about the space, you know, amid crypto winter, but I think just this week, there has been quite a big development, at least in the space of R&D, in that Big Pharma, specifically Pfizer, has joined a $4.1 million funding round that is led by a DAO, so VitaDAO. They are a decentralized autonomous organization focused on funding longevity research. And Pfizer's ventures arm is among the investors in this DAO. So, you know, what this means is that Pfizer will get to, along with the other DAO members, decide on how research funds will be used, the projects that they will back, and things like that. So Big Pharma joining the crypto community. We talked about, you know, like one of the clear use cases of a DAO is like, you know, how to distribute or as a way to determine how to distribute or allocate a pool of funds that users put in. I think this development, which also saw like, you know, Balaji Srinivasan, quite a well-known investor in the space. He's a former CTO of Coinbase and a general partner at A16Z. And a few other big names from the biosciences community and VC crowd participating in a DAO, shows that, you know, these big players still see some value, or at least don't mind experimenting with such structures in terms of distributing funds. Pfizer also said that it will participate in terms of evaluating deal flow, incubation, commercialization of projects and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Mark?
I'm just very curious as to how that deal actually happened, because this is actually, in my opinion, it is a big deal. I'm sorry, I don't have the best choice of words, like big deal.
Yeah, anyway. I realize, I've come to realize that, yes.
but it honestly is a big deal that, like, you know, like Pfizer's ventures arm have decided to kind of invest in a DAO, you know, or participate in this, right? So I'm just very curious as to how that deal actually happened. And as it is already, you know, you have VitaDAO, right? So like before Pfizer actually came on board, how did the community come together? Obviously, like the key members in the community probably, you know, like formulated a pitch or something like that. Someone knew someone from Pfizer, you know, and I'm very curious as to how those conversations went, right? How did that pitch meeting go? Like, you know, because I mean, even if it's a DAO, like they would have to approach it in a similar way that they were approaching, say, like, you know, like a VC, right? right? I think that was probably what had happened in the early stages. And looking at how like Pfizer's participation will include these certain areas, right? I wonder whether there are any other requirements or terms in there, you know, that enabled them to make an investment like this.
Okay, so maybe I'll explain to you how, like, at least from what I understand, how VitaDAO works. So they basically are a collective for community governed and decentralized drug development. That's what they are. So basically, they collectively fund and digitize research in the form of IP NFTs. And then they spin out new biotech companies based on that. The DAO monetizes the IP it generates through research and then returns the proceeds to the DAO to go on to finance more research. And specifically for VitaDAO, it's, they say they just want to focus on moonshots relating to longevity research.
I mean, I have thoughts on longevity research also.
Yeah,
but anyway,
thousands of years of moonshot, just saying. I mean,
yeah, so the question then here is...
But your point about longevity, there's quite a long history of interest among billionaires.
Did you guys read the one on Bloomberg? But like, there's this billionaire who's like, you know, like essentially investing like millions of dollars to try and like, you know, turn back the clock. I think that he's looking to get a new liver or spleen or some shit like that.
Yeah,
like,
guy well. Wants to live longer.
I mean, history on like billionaires and now, as you know, crypto billionaires or millionaires, basically rich people are rich folk interested in longevity or and funding longevity research. Mm-hmm. You know, this includes like Vitalik Buterin as well, Justin Sun, Brian Armstrong.
Vitalik needs a lot of help with longevity. His whole face looks like he needs a lot of help. He looks very like malnourished.
I mean, when you amass wealth, you need time to spend it. So,
Fair. Guy looks damn overworked, but anyway, yes.
There's a long history between like, you know, rich people and now crypto and, you know,
So the thing that I'm very curious or like, you know, like goes back to my first question, like how did that pitch meeting go and why does Pfizer see value in a DAO?
No, okay. So to me, that is not the crux of the situation, right? Like I get why you're curious. Like it's something like, why would they join and all that, right? But to me, it's there's two train of thoughts that's interesting, right? One is Pfizer joining the DAO also subjects itself to other bigger players joining the DAO and then pivoting the research into a different way, right? That means, although now they may be the biggest juicer, right? They may be the biggest guy in the game, right? And that's why people are talking about it, right? So they're one of the bigger players in the game. They can direct it because it is a DAO, right? That's the whole idea of it, where if you're the biggest boy and you can amass enough people, then you get to direct the direction of this thing, right? So that is an interesting part, right? Because it also subjects itself to other players or other people coming, because this is an open in the space, in the idea of a DAO, if there are bigger players that come in and they can direct the thing differently. Right, so this is the first thing that I find very interesting. It's like, oh wow, okay, these big companies are willing to play around in this way, right? And the other is the possibility of research then moving down a different path. How is it really beneficial for research? Right, because research is like a moonshot, like you guys have already established, right? It's a moonshot ideas. And when biopharma companies go for listing, right, they desperately need the money. They're not like tech companies. They are listing to try to like grow the business. Like biopharma companies, when they list, they literally need the money to research. Like if they don't have, they're going to close shop immediately. Right, so with all these complexity then being built into the DAO and the research, right, then it makes me question like, oh, okay, is it really going to work over a long period of time, right? Because of all these possibility of shifting back and forth, changing different research, having the power structure keep shifting because it is a DAO. You know what I'm saying, guys?
No, exactly. So because it's a DAO and because, you know, they're essentially working in an area which is highly complex, and I'm not even talking about the science, you know, wouldn't it make more sense to have decision making, like, you know, really centralized? Like you could say that, yes, you know, because the biggest investors in the DAO have the most say, right? But it is still like kind of like, you know, a group of them. It's not a corporation making the decisions, right? And then that you would think that, wouldn't that be more efficient that way? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Then
just interesting that they are, you know, exploring new avenues on drug development.
It is definitely
like
interesting.
This technology, I mean, DAOs and like IP NFTs and all that. I guess people like Pfizer also see that, you know, if they don't have at least a finger in that pie, it might overtake them in the future, because it offers a much faster route to raising funds and getting projects on the table, which, you know, typically takes a very long time in traditional, within traditional structures.
Yeah, yeah. And for clarity's sake, I think for all you tuning in, you need to realize that in the pharma space, research is very complicated. In the early days, a lot of pharma companies will come together to research together, right? So they research the active component or the thing that works, the active ingredient. That is the part where they come together. After they are done with their research, that means it's proven to work, right? A plus B gets you C or something. So after this is proven, they usually split it up into different utilization based on where they come from. Like, you know, Pfizer is very famous for vaccines. So they will take the active component to go back to their supply chain and figure, okay, how can I use this active component for a commercial product that I can sell, right? So in other words, the NFT licensing structure is quite interesting because it essentially elevates the front part, which is the part where everybody in the first place already comes together to try to mitigate their risk to find the active component. And then after that, they can license this NFT IP from this DAO to then commercial in their own way, right? Some people, they famous for like curing cancer. Some people, they focus on like vaccines. Some people do like malaria, you know? So it is a very interesting IP development back end for pharma. It is very complicated. It's not as simple as just building a supply chain.
Yeah, I think it's actually very exciting, like, in my opinion.
It is interesting.
You know? I mean, if you are able to cast the net wide enough and then have access to all these potentially, you know, like, game changing IPs, right?
And then as Pfizer, in this DAO, you get first dibs.
You get first dibs. Yeah, so I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the past, the funding method will be they go to the university, they get some sort of a preliminary funding, and then they get enough proof of concept to then list and get the next round of funding. Right. So it is a very, very slow and tedious manner. Maybe this is the new way.
I mean, it's just another example of utility of Web3 tech, which goes beyond NFT profile pictures.
Thank you. Finally. I must repeat, there was a period of time someone said, "Oh yeah, you know this NFT thing, right? It can be used to be a fractional ownership indicator." I was like, "Brother, I think that's how it started before it became a JPEG file." Okay, so like this whole JPEG shit came way after when people trying to monetize it.
No, I'm just gonna say that, you know, we started off this podcast with like an example of like social media app. Like, we could no real use case for like Web3, and then, you know, to ending it off with like, you know, hey man, this could actually be a space for the Web3 tech, you know, could be very relevant and useful.
Yeah, it is. A DAO. Interesting. Yeah, we need a DAO. We need our own DAO, and we need a Reddit page. Anyway, the team is on the Reddit already, so we will see you on the Reddit soon. Yeah, let's take it from there. Cool.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In closing, any last things anybody want to add for today's episode? I think quite interesting, eh?
Not for me. I mean, like, you know, I think there's about, what, 7 more days to Chinese New Year. So, you know, whoever else is celebrating, you know, enjoy while it lasts.
Wait, do you all celebrate Chinese New Year all the way 15 days?
No, not really. I don't. But then, like, I try to hold off my New Year resolutions until after, like, the last day of Chinese New Year.
Cutting yourself some slack.
Home pao draw on Friday.
Yeah, so like, yes, that's what I really mean. You know,
wait,
so
we have home pao draw?
Six more days to live in sin.
The total, 12 million.
Okay. Oh, total. Okay, Singapore Pools. Do you all know what's the tagline of Singapore Pools? Giving hope, improving lives. That is the tagline of Singapore Pools.
No, but I mean, to be fair, I mean, yeah, I was gonna think of something similar, like, you know, like We Care or like We, I don't know, whatever.
No, don't. You better don't take the PR campaign for Singapore Pools. I will hate you for it. But anyway, thank you guys. Thank you, lovely. We'll see all of you next week. Yeah, as we continue to cover more in the crypto Web3, you know, blockhead space. You know, yeah. In last call to action, if you want to take a look at some of the different articles that have been covered today, you can head over to blockhead.co. You know, get them to next million page visits, right? 500,000 already. So we're going to go to the million. See you all next week. Take care. Bye.
All right, guys.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Hey Coconuts, so yes, I hope you enjoy this new show that we're building together with the team at Blockhead. And the goal is very clear, right? We're not here to shield any token or be a cheerleader for any project, but we feel that there's a lot of development that's going on in this space that we could cover and continue to be a little bit smarter as investors. I mean, eventually you tune in every week to a financial podcast network so that you can be smarter with your investments. And if it so happens this is something that you're looking at, the crypto space, Web3, Metaverse, all these kind of stuff, then that is where we're trying to cover, but not from the angle of like, this is good, that is bad, but really trying to see it from like, what is happening, how is it developing, and I hope you find this useful and interesting, right? So if you want to continue to get more coverage around the crypto space, check out blockhead.co, and then we will see you next week.